Only smart people get up early enough to listen to the Francine Marie Show. So thanks for listening, smarty pants.
Oi, Billy! Oscar! Dave! Get up! Francine Marie Show's on!
Good morning. Thanks for joining us. You know, we've been talking about health disparities for many, many years. I don't know how many years. As many years as we've been on this planet, we've said, you know what? African Americans really don't have the advantages when it comes to health care. Today, we're talking about a health disparities forum that is happening November the 12th, 5:30 to 7:30. Here to talk about it. Yep, it's our new best friend. It's Susan Rucker. She's the assistant professor at Queen's University of Charlotte. She is part of the legislative chair at Healthcare Justice NC. She is the fellow at American College of Healthcare Executives. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Susan. Good morning.
Good morning, Francine. Thank you so much for having me.
It sounds from your title that you have been around for a minute and you know some things about health disparities. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, thank you. Health disparities has been my passion for my 40-year career.
And in those 40 years, when we talk about health disparities, besides the event that we're going to talk about today, what are some of the health disparities that you have seen, we are seeing now? I know COVID-19 is right up there. So let's talk about the health disparities.
Yes, the disparities have been around forever. COVID has brought them to the forefront and has made them public. But unfortunately, they have always been there. For example, infant mortality. Infant mortality for African Americans is 15.6 per infant death per 1,000 versus 2.5 deaths per 1,000 for white. And that's according to the CDC. That's 16.5 versus 2.5. That is totally unacceptable. And African Americans are 30% more likely than whites to die prematurely from heart disease. Colorectal cancer, African Americans have the highest incidence and the highest mortality rate than any ethnic group in the United States. So African Americans bear a disproportionate burden of disease and outcomes than any other population in our United States.
And we could actually call our healthcare professionals the most smartest, brilliant folks that walk the planet, right? And although
they are restricted by the healthcare system that we have in place, which is primarily a for-profit driven system.
Oh, because I thought you were going to say it was the Hippocratic Oath or something. No, they've been silenced, right?
Yes, they are silenced by the fact that insurance companies are what determines what kind of care you get, not who the physician is. So if I go to physician A, who is a wonderful physician, and I have better insurance than the next person, I will have a better outcome. And when you think about insurance companies are not there to make you healthy. They're there to generate a profit. And that's where my belief is that we need a single healthcare system, a single payer healthcare system that includes everyone, where nobody's left out because they have a job that doesn't provide health insurance, or they have a pre-existing condition, or that they have a job that they don't make enough money to pay insurance premiums at a for-profit level.
Wow. From my understanding, you take your students to different countries so that you can, I don't know if you're judging or what scale you're using to say, hey, look at these folks over here in another country who are doing a really good job of providing good health care for folks and having insurance too, versus us. We look like a third world country in some senses.
Exactly. And we do operate like a third world country in some aspects. In fact, our infant mortality rates are worse than some third world countries. And that infant mortality rate is only for African Americans and minorities. So in doing a comparative analysis, other countries, we are the only industrialized country that does not have a single payer health care system. We also have, out of all of those countries, the worst health outcomes. And the reason why is we don't have universal access and we don't have a system where everybody has equal access and equal outcomes.
So let's talk about equal. Okay, what would be equal? Mm-hmm. Did you consider, and you don't have to answer yes or no, we'll keep moving. Did you consider Obamacare an equal and fair system for folks who didn't have insurance?
No, I thought it was a marvelous first step. Now, Obama was dealing with a lot of politics. Obamacare is not, or the ACA, is not exactly what he proposed and what he wanted in the beginning. It's what politics and lobbyists changed the system to look like. So Obamacare, or the ACA, increased the number of people who are uninsured by tens of millions. So for the very first time, possibly 20 million people got health insurance for the first time in their lives because of how the ACA was set up. But because for-profit insurance companies are part of this mix, they weren't making enough money. So then the rates continued to escalate. We need to change that. What would really work is if we had what's called a risk pool, a national risk pool, which means everybody pays in and those people that need it get what they need. If you are a for-profit organization, what you want to do is get your risk pool to be just the healthy people that don't need health care, and that's when you make money. So the for-profit insurance companies have actually farmed out to Medicare some of their highest cost patients, which are your end-stage renal disease, and it puts me on the other one. But the highest cost are severe disabilities. Those two categories don't get paid for by for-profit health insurance companies. Our government pays for them under Medicare. And Medicare is our most efficiently run healthcare system that we have. If you compare the cost with your for-profit insurance companies such as Cigna and United Healthcare, Medicare has the better outcomes at the lowest price because Medicare doesn't pay an overhead to executives and they don't have this huge marketing budget. They're not always advertising. So a patient on Medicare doesn't have all the forms and the hoops to jump through. And that cost savings can be put into diagnosing, treating, and prescribing medicine for patients in need instead of that money going into denying treatment. And I know a lot of people have these stories where a doctor orders a test and it gets denied by the health insurance company. And worse is when it is initially accepted, they get a bill and then it's denied and the patients owe thousands of dollars. Healthcare right now is the number one reason for people filing bankruptcy.
Wow.
So people who have done the right thing their whole lot, they've worked full time, they've paid health care benefits, they never needed them, then all of a sudden it's 1 year they need them and it doesn't cover enough. So as an example, if you make $40,000 a year, my health insurance premium per month is $1,200. So that's $14,000. I'm down to making $25,000. I also have a deductible of $12,000. So if you look at it by taxes, that means if you call your deductibles and your health care premiums a tax, I'm taxed at 66% just for my health care, nothing else. So what we do in the United States is we create words and slogans to make things more appealing, but not factual. If we called my health care premium a tax, we are the highest tax nation. But because we call it something different, we think, you know, we don't like taxes. So we call it a premium and then it's okay.
Well, yeah. I mean, we have a habit in the United States of candy coating death. I say that because of these commercials that you hear. It's like, well, if you want to take this medicine over here to get rid of your allergies, you may have some anal leakage and you may die. But hey, you won't have the allergies. So, yeah, isn't it crazy how we talk people into their own death? Come walk this way toward the light, Clarice. And it makes it sound appealing. I mean, look at all these great commercials. There's Flo, right? There's the Nationwide Allstate guy. We make it so nice when it talks about insurance, but it's bleeding us dry.
It is. And, you know, we have talked about a single healthcare system here in the United States, I think, before Eisenhower. And so both Republicans and Democrats have embraced a single-payer healthcare system throughout history. It gets shot down at the lobbyists because the lobbyists are there to protect the money of the corporations that pay them. And unfortunately, your nonprofit organizations don't have lobbyists, and we as people don't have lobbyists. And one of the things that's happening now that I see in the politics is instead of saying single-payer, we want, and really House Bill 1384 is the number you want to remember because that is the single-payer healthcare system that covers all, and it's called Medicare for All, and it's associated a lot with Bernie Sanders. But we've come out with these other slogans and names from for-profit companies to try to dilute this, such as Healthcare for Americans or United for American Healthcare. And these are good words and they make us feel good. But when you get into the facts and you break these proposals down, they don't include everybody. It's not affordable. There's not equal access. Your medical home is being disrupted, and it can change, and you can be denied. So what we really want is a system where everybody is included, where it's affordable, where quality is enhanced, and there's equal access and equal outcomes. And we don't want to have to change our medical home or our physician every year because our insurance company changed or because we changed jobs.
Right.
Yeah, and in COVID, we have millions of people who have done all the right things, and they've paid for their health insurance. They get COVID, they're sick, and they lose their job, or because of COVID, they've lost their job. Now they don't have health insurance. So they may have paid for 20 years and not needed it. Now they need it, and they don't have it.
Right. I wish we could, whatever you don't use, you can save, but whatever you don't use, you lose.
Yeah, but somebody else wins. It's just not you.
I just adore you. You've got to come on and talk more. Before we leave out, I do want to talk about infant mortality, but we've got to mention it's a Dr. Berwick. Tell us more about Dr. Don Berwick.
Dr. Don Berwick is a delight, and everybody who meets him loves him. He's brilliant. He's a pediatrician. And so you know he has that softness in his heart for everybody. He is the inaugural president of the Institute for Health Improvement, which has now become the premier organization in the United States for health improvement. And he's a faculty member for Harvard Medical School.
Wow.
And he has been passionate about health disparities for his whole career. And he recognizes what you were saying in the beginning about the distrust. There is a lot of value to you saying that you distrust the medical system, because for decades there has been abuse. And there's a book that will break your heart, and it's called Medical Apartheid. Mm. And it's a story that documents all of these atrocities that have happened in the United States that we just don't hear about.
Right, and you don't hear about them in medical school, right?
You have to speak these things out. Unless you have a professor who is more enlightened and can share these stories. But there is this process called Institutional Review Board, where these atrocities are supposed to be stopped by people assessing criteria to make sure none of these atrocities ever happen again. Not that it's 100%, but it's made huge strides in doing that. In fact, research that has not gone through an institutional review board is not considered credible because you don't know whether people were recruited and treated appropriately. So you could do a whole show on medical apartheid and the atrocities, and it's heartbreaking.
Wow.
Before you leave, let's talk about infant mortality. So you say, for instance, an African-American woman is pregnant and a white woman is pregnant. They're going to receive two different types of care. And
they may.
It depends on your, I went with a midwife that I knew personally. So sometimes in those cases, it's good to know your farmer and it's good to know your doctor, because it depends on what kind of care you get.
You're right. And there are studies that say that African-American babies born and cared for by a white practitioner are more likely to die, because a white practitioner is less likely to recognize some of the symptoms of death or may perceive something differently. And I think that is a very big eye-opener. And Serena Williams is another eye-opener. Here's somebody who is fluent, articulate, insured, and she on their side delivering her child. And I think we need to recognize the underlying issues of why that might happen. Communication, education, perception. There are a lot of reasons why we have different outcomes.
Has anybody just realized and
boiled it down to, these are some race-hating people who have great jobs, who make big decisions, and it is what it is?
No, I don't know about race-hating, but I do think greed has an awful lot to do with why our healthcare system is the way it is and why it keeps getting voted down. For individual outcomes, I think we have a long way to go in learning how to understand each other and listen and communicate.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I think we have a lot to do with the health disparities. Health disparities, we're not just healthy because we're absent of disease. We're healthy a lot because of where we live, how much money we make, whether I can go out and take a walk because I live in a safe neighborhood, my education, access to food, whether I live in a food desert. All of these things are important to my health. But what you see over and over again is the food desert and the unsafe neighborhoods and the lack of education are primarily in minority neighborhoods. And if you want to expand on that further, those are also the areas where there are the highest environmental contaminants. So at some point, the playing field is so uneven, and we have to address health not just as the absence of disease, but we have to address it systemically in getting rid of the social determinants that are negative and giving everybody a similar chance.
Right. That's all we want to do. We got a new best friend this morning. It's Susan Rucker. She is our assistant professor at Queen's University of Charlotte. She is our legislative chair at the Healthcare Justice NC. She's a fellow at the American College of Healthcare Executives. You hit on a key point when you said environmental contaminants, because yes. I won't call any names out, but some folks will build houses on contaminated land knowing it's not good.
Right. And that's our greed factor. We know better that somebody's making a lot of money doing that. And that's been around for decades. Well, greed's been around forever. Mm. And we have to put everybody's health above this greed.
How do we do that?
Well, I think it's addressing this and caring more for our fellow man by addressing the systemic racism, where I'm only doing as well as whoever's doing the work in my area. I can't say that I'm doing well until everybody in my area is doing well.
Yeah.
And we are all, but by God's grace, the person who doesn't stand a chance.
Yeah, exactly. You can almost see it from 100 yards away, who's going to make it and who's not going to make it. When it comes to survival of the fittest during COVID, we can definitely talk about 5G when they turn it up to 6G and 7G. I think people are going to be dropping like flies, but what do I know? But I do know that we have these grocery store deserts, and why in 2020 we can't have a Harris Teeter in a challenging economic neighborhood, in a neighborhood who's struggling just to make it? Why would you want to only sell them hot dogs and potato chips? I don't get it.
Exactly. We need coupons for broccoli. We need coupons for other fresh vegetables. And that needs to be what is subsidized in food. And that has to be the easiest path to get food versus the easy path being your fries, your potato chips, and hot dogs. I'm trying to get a community garden started, and you would think that's a no-brainer, but it's been a six-month fight, and I don't think it's going to happen.
What?
So, you know, whenever there's more than two people, there's always going to be a disagreement. We don't always make decisions on what's best for everybody. We frequently make decisions on what's best for me.
Yeah.
But we don't realize until everybody's doing well, we really are not.
We need to invite folks out. We've been talking for a little bit, Susan. We've been talking to Susan Rucker. She's inviting us out on November the 12th. Now, this is a health disparities forum that you might just want to sit back and listen to, because I don't think anything has been done of the likes of this. So we can email Susan.
No.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Susan.
I think this is a great time to do it. It's probably the hottest time now to make this happen. And unfortunately, COVID has happened, but can we make something positive out of it by saying this really exposed a lot of wrongdoing? This is what we need to do to fix it.
Right.
And it wouldn't have been sad if we had done this in the first place. And that would be a single payer system.
We could say that three times. Single payer system. That's what we need. I want to thank Dr. Donna Murray, because she introduced us. We want to thank, of course, Dr. Berwick. Who else are we thanking today? Dr. Robert Lindsay, Dr. Elisa
and
Melvin. And we also want to thank
Dr. Swain, who's organized it.
Who's that again? Say that one more time.
Dr. Gwendolyn Swain, and she's the vaccine organizer.
Oh, we like an organizer, don't we? Thank you. All right. We can email Susan if we want to attend this virtual event. We love it because it's virtual. You can email Susan at Rucker, R-U-C-K-E-R, the letter S, at queens.edu. Did I get it right?
You did.
I did.
And it's free.
It's free, she said. It's free. And that book, I'm going to get that book that you mentioned, Medical Apartheid.
And I will buy you the tissue while you need it.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. Thank you for what you do and all your colleagues do. And we will see you on November the 12th, 5:30 to 7:30.
Well, great. This has been a delight, and thank you so much.
Well, we're going to take a short break, and guess what? We're coming right back.
You're listening to the Francine Marie Show. We're popping out for a quick cup of tea, but we'll be right back.
This is my jam and jelly, y'all, on the Francine Marie Show. Spread that show out, girl. Spread it out.